I have not talked to her recently. Think that it'd be more often, but we do have each other's numbers and we'll text every now and then.
It was quite often, and I just wonder if the Taylor Dane bit actually did grow organically out of you simply running into her over and over again.
Yeah. I mean, the whole story is true, and I organically ran into her and organically built the story, and there's really not any exaggeration to it. There's a, you know, there's what if moments, and I maybe not even what if. I think it's just a factual, ridiculous story that's authentically built.
And I actually feel confident that I'm the reason that Taylor Dane ended up putting out another record. Because you know she called her manager. I was like, my fans miss me. They love me. I mean, sure, they're a bunch of he-she-looking robots. Excuse me. I'm sorry to bother you. But I just have to tell you. I love your voice. Excuse me. I'm sorry to bother you. But I just have to tell you. Excuse me. People are always like, there is no way that story's true. It's like, why would I make up a 14-minute story about a pop singer that nobody's really heard of? And just as a side note, I left out other times that I ran into Taylor Day. Anyway, my name's Tig. Thanks so much.
Well into the Taylor Dane stand-up, you asked the audience something like, you'll never guess who I ran into. And the audience audience assumes it's a rhetorical question. They know the answer is Taylor Dane. But you wait for someone in the audience to actually shout out Taylor Dane. How long will you wait for an answer?
I will wait forever. And when I was in Australia, the audience was so polite that when I said, you'll never believe who I ran into, or guess who I ran into, they just sat there quietly. And I said, no, guess. I'm asking you to guess. And nobody said anything. And so I just sat there and I said, I'm not going to move on until somebody guesses. And so I just sat on stage and stared back at them. And I remember the sound person coming over once the show ended, just panicked, out of breath. Like, oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I thought I was going to die during the Taylor Dane when nobody was. I didn't. Yeah. That went on for like 5 minutes. And I was like, yeah, I thought it just built up the tension of the show. And, it was so great.
And it's that tension I want to explore for a moment. You can hear the laughter, even with an American audience, when they answer fairly quickly. You can hear the laughter sort of shift a little bit. It gets this nervous tinge to it.
Then like 9 months passed. And I happened to be out to eat with that same friend of mine, Pam. There was a party of 10 seated right behind us. You guys are not going to believe who was sitting there. Any guesses? Just think about the story I've been telling.
Taylor Dane.
Yeah, it was Taylor Dane. That's exactly who it was.
What is it about making the audience squirm that you like?
Pam was like, oh my gosh.
I think just the release. It just, when the audience is uncomfortable or squirming, when all of that is released, the laugh is so gigantic. And everything that follows after that is heightened. And I feel like the jokes that follow, just all of it, it just is, I really enjoy it.
I enjoy it too. And I think it's a great technique to sort of disarm the audience as well.
Uh-huh.
You told the Taylor Dane story on the live This American Life program, and we had a Facebook question from our audience someone wanted to know, what has This American Life and Taylor Dane done for your career, and how have you helped Taylor Dane?
You know, I think I have opened her to a whole new world. I mean, I don't think the NPR world and the Taylor Dayne world were very intertwined.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. And I was in a bar in New York at like 4 a.m. with this other comedian just talking, and all of a sudden Taylor Dayne's "Tell It to My Heart" came on the jukebox, and I turned around like, oh my gosh, how crazy! And there was some hipster kid laughing, and he was like, "I played that for you," and I was like, oh my gosh. You know, of course, this guy probably didn't even know who Taylor Dayne was before that. So I guess I've sent some unlikely fans her way.
So whether it's
genuine or ironic.
So these two audiences that don't meet, the Taylor Dayne audience and the public radio audience, This American Life has opened the door perhaps to a new audience for you, though, the public radio audience.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. It's just kind of crisscrossed a bit. It's nice.
How do interviews like this, the internet, TV appearances, work in favor or against a live performance? Are the jokes funny for people a second time around?
I think so. I wouldn't think people should expect every, like, Taylor Dayne or the impressions at the show. I haven't done Taylor Dayne since, probably a year and a half, since I did it on This American Life. I think I've done it since that day.
It lives forever on the internet, though.
Yeah. But so I don't know if people should be showing up. And maybe, I'll pepper in some old jokes, maybe one or two in an hour show. But in general, I have an all new hour of material. And it is funny, when people see a joke pop up on the internet and it'll be 3 or 4 different places on the internet, and then people are like angry, put up new stuff. Why don't you write some new material? And it's like, I am, but I'm not the one putting the stuff up on the internet. They think that I'm the one posting that and that it's my one joke that I do. You know what I mean? I have all new material.
Conan O'Brien seems to be a fan. You're on the show regularly. You've appeared on Conan's After Hours stand-up series online. It used to be that appearing on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson was the big break, and especially getting invited to sit down with Johnny after the stand-up. That was a huge recognition. Is there anything out there like that today? Is it Conan, Letterman, Kimmel? Do you have to sort of do them all now?
I think it's This American Life, to be honest. That was a huge bump for me in my career. They have millions of listeners and so devoted, that fan base. And it's not just some comedian that Ira, has to just book every week. It's something special that he's excited about or a story he's excited about. And then I think it is, for me, it's helpful to be on Conan and hopefully do something funny or special on there that will stick with people. But I don't really know what the big, I don't think there is a big talk show break these days.
It's interesting you said This American Life, because I think Ira is really plugged into his audience and the public radio audience, and he's not going to bring somebody to that audience that he doesn't think that they're going to like. I think there's this instant sort of recognition that this is something that Tig Notaro, somebody, a public radio listener, should pay attention to, and there's sort of maybe an instant loyalty, do you think?
Well, yeah, that's what I was saying, that's why it's so powerful to be on This American Life, is because it's not just, let's have that person on. They're really behind who they've invited on their show and the story they're telling, and the fan base is just so devoted. And I think when you get into that loop, it's really helpful. It's made David Sedaris and Mike Birbiglia, their careers explode.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. On the phone is Tig Notaro. Tig, can we talk a little bit about your health?
Sure.
First of all, how are you doing? Are you getting tired of that question?
I think it's nice, and I like to get it out there that I'm doing well, because there is a lot of information that I was not doing well. So no, I don't mind saying that I'm doing really well, and I feel great, and I'm in remission, and I'm very focused on keeping my health in tip-top shape.
You dropped the cancer bomb at the now sort of legendary set at Largo. How did you decide to roll that out on stage?
I had this one show booked, and I had just been diagnosed, and my mother had just died, and all this stuff had happened in a short period of time, and I think because my life had fallen apart so quickly, and when I was diagnosed with invasive bilateral cancer, I just thought, well, I guess I'm going to die, because nothing else in my life had been positive. And I just wanted to go on stage one last time before I started treatment or before I died or whatever was happening. I just didn't know. And I love stand-up so much that, yeah, I wanted to perform another time, and I didn't feel like it would be authentic to talk about Taylor Dayne or anything other than what was going on in my life. So I felt like it was my only choice, really.
Hello. Good evening. Hello. I have cancer. How are you? Hi, how are you? Is everybody having a good time? I have cancer. How are you? It's a good time. Diagnosed with cancer. Feels good. Just diagnosed with cancer. God. Oh my God. It's weird because with humor, the equation is tragedy plus time equals comedy. I am just at tragedy right now.
It's a really strange line you're walking there.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I mean, probably even more strange for you than for the audience.
Right. It was something that I did not imagine would go over as well as it did. And, you know, as you heard, it's not like it was start to finish the most hilarious show of all time, but it was just a moment in time and a very unusual show. And the audience was just fantastic. They were just fantastic because they didn't know. I didn't know how to navigate through the show. They didn't know how to navigate through the show. I was at times saying things that weren't funny. They were at times not laughing, then laughing. And it just, you know, we made it through it together, you know.
Yeah, it almost seems like maybe it wouldn't have worked with a different audience.
I always tell people that those were the exact perfect people that were at the show that night. They completely helped me through that.